We're holding on your dynamite bays, six lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of a discussion. The Gemara started a discussion yesterday about when we say that a Gzar Din of the Eibishter can be ripped up, can be overturned, and when we say not. So one thing we said was that there's a difference between a Yochid and a Tzibur. So we said even with a Tzibur, if there's a way to accomplish things without actually ripping up the Gzar Din, for example, we said about the rain, that the Eibishter makes sure it has the little about the rain that was originally determined is going to fall in the right places in the right time, then he'll do that. But otherwise, if necessary, he'll rip it up. As opposed to Yechidim, we said that not. Continuing the discussion, Toshma, Shala Gluria HaGiyardas Asram Gamliel. Gluria, the Giyardas Asram Gamliel, the following question. Ksiv B'Terashchem, it says in your Torah, Ashela Yisafonim, it says that the Eibishter does not favor anybody, he doesn't show favoritism.
Not Gluria with a resh,
but Gluria with a line. And they may well be related names, I don't know. I mean, this Gluria, she's called, Mephoshim says she's called Giyardas because eventually she became one. At the time when she asked this question, she wasn't necessarily, that's what she says, B'Terashchem, in your Torah, not in ours, right? Anyway.
In a way, for non-Jews, it's still in a way for them a guidebook, because it has, if you look at it in the right lens, there's a very similar
stick. Okay, so she asks, it says, one pasuk says, Hashem lo yisafonim, that Hashem does not show favoritism. But the other pasuk says, Hashem will lift up his face towards you. It's the same expression, one in the negative, one in the positive. Hashem will lift up his face. So one is Hashem doesn't lift up a face, and the other one, Hashem will lift up his face for you. Tezus points out, I mean, the question is not really such a question. The simple meaning is that Hashem lo yisafonim doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't lift up his face to us. It means that Hashem does not show favoritism to people. For example, the rich, the powerful, or whatever, unlike human judges, who might, Hashem doesn't. But whereas Yisrael Hashem Panu Melecha is talking about Hashem's face. But, you know, still, you know, she found it to be difficult. That's the question. That one pasuk is implying that Hashem does lift up his face. In other words, he does deal favorably with us. And the other one says that, no, Hashem Hashem Panu Melecha, that he does, but lo yisafonim, that he doesn't. Nitpala Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. So Rabbi Yossi HaKohen joined together with her, like to go and walk with her or whatever, to explain to her what the situation is. She didn't ask him, but Rabbi Yossi HaKohen is the one who gave the answer.
I heard something
about
that was that she went to a
shiach,
and then she had to,
she
was
answering
what her shiach.
Amalah, so Rabbi Yossi HaKohen tells her, let me give you a mashal, what it's like. But Adam should know she's a chaver of money. It's like a person who's owed a money by somebody else. Somebody else owes him a money. The kavala is man b'fnei melech, and they set up a time, a deadline by which he's supposed to pay back in front of the king. V'nishpalo b'chayav melech, and the guy who borrowed the money actually swore by the life of the king, I promise b'chayav melech that I'm going to pay you back by such and such a date. He gives man v'leparo. Time came and he missed his payment. So the poor guy comes to ask Mechila from the king. I swore falsely in your name, it comes out. But Amalai, so the king tells him, El Boni Lot Machalach. My embarrassment, fine, I forgive you for it. Lecho Pius as Chavercha. Go ask Mechila by your friend that you didn't pay him back in time. Hachanami, so the same thing over here. Kan Baveret Shemen Anu Mamakim, Kan Baveret Shemen Anu Machaveret. So the one passage that says that Hashem lo yisafonim, that Hashem does not lift up his face towards you, means when it's talking about, the one where it says yisa Hashem ponav elecha, that Hashem will lift up his face, that he'll deal with you kindly, more kindly than you deserve, basically. That's Baveret Shemen Anu Mamakim. That's the equivalent of swearing falsely by the king's name. Kan Baveret Shemen Anu Machaveret, whereas opposed to the Benodim Machaveret aspect, that the Eidishtik doesn't forgive, that's Hashem lo yisafonim, that Hashem doesn't show you any favoritism for that. And that was the explanation that they went with, Ad Shabbat Rav Akiva Valimit, until Rav Akiva came along and taught a different explanation. Kan Kodim Gzadin, Kan Lacha Gzadin. One is before the Gzadin, the Eibishter can lift up his face to you, in other words, treat you favorably. Kan Lacha Gzadin, whereas after the Gzadin, the Eibishter says, no, at that point it's finished, it's sealed, Asher Lo Yisafonim, the Eibishter is not going to lift his face to you. It's just a different way of explaining. It's a different way of explaining. The point is, though, that we see from that after the Gzar Din, that's it. It's a done deal. And the answer is, Hachanami b'yachid. You could say that this also, the Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha versus Asher Lo Yisafonim, is also talking about an individual. With a tzibur, indeed, this answer of Rabbi Akiva's wouldn't work. Because with a tzibur, we're saying, that's where we started with the discussion yesterday, a tzibur can always be rescinded, even after the Gzar Din. Tosfos points out the Gemara has in a couple of other in Brachas yet another spin on the Yishashem Panav Elacha that the and appropriately it's from this week's parasha too. But the Malach Hasharet say to Hashem, what do you mean, Hashem? What do you mean, Yishashem Panav Elacha? Hashem lo Yisabanim. You're not supposed to show anybody favoritism. And the Eibishter says, you know, how can I not show favoritism to the Yidden when they even technically you're only supposed to make a bracha achron of an rechalt of a savalta, you've eaten and been filled up, and here they make a bracha achron even after kizayis a kabeza. So there's that also. But nevertheless, all of this is true. It is true that Hashem is noisy upon him, but only before Gzardin. But after Gzardin, it would only be for the Tzibur, not for Yechidim.
What's the reason after Gzardin?
Because we're saying after Gzardin, it's already a Gzardin. The person didn't do tshuva, by the didn't improve, they didn't do the various things that we talked about the last couple of days to fix up things before they actually made the Gzardin. You know, then
the
exact means the decree, the verdict.
Verdict is going to happen, or that it actually starts coming into fruition, like no.
No, that it actually was decided. We're going to see that from the next thing.
And regardless of the Avera.
Right. I mean, yeah. And the Gemara points out, Gzardin de Yochid Tanoi. Actually, this business about whether the Gzardin of a Tzibur, fine, everybody agrees, can be overturned. But the Gzardin of a Yochid, whether it can be rescinded, that is actually Tanoi. It's actually Machlokes Tanoi. Netanya, Hoyer of Meyomer. Imagine you have Shnaim Sha'olu Lamit of a Chulin Shava. You have two people who got sick, they're both in bed, with the same sickness. V'chein Shnaim Sha'olu L'Gardum L'Dun, or the same thing, two people who went to the Gardum to be judged. Rashi explains that Gardum is a place, it's the courthouse where they judge capital cases. The Aruch explains that Gardum comes from the word grud, like an English grade, and whatever it means, like a high platform with steps, because that was the typical kind of thing they had for that, like a high platform that they judge people for capital cases on, whatever. So you have two people go up to the Gardum, Lidon, to be judged, Virginia and Shava, and it's both the same case. They're both accused of the same crime. Nevertheless, Zeh Yored V'Zeh Lo Yored. Sometimes you have that one person comes down from the bed and it gets better, and the other one not. Rahman al-Tan. Zeh Nitzel V'Zeh Lo Nitzel. One gets saved from the death sentence, and the other one not. Mipnei Ma Zeh Yored V'Zeh Lo Yored. Zeh Nitzel V'Zeh Lo Nitzel. So Nur, the mayor says, how come, Taka? One gets better and the other one not. One gets saved and one not. Because Zeh Yisbal V'Nen, Zeh Yisbal V'Nen. One guy davened and the neighbors answer him, the other one got davened and the neighbors didn't answer him. Well, but the question then, Mipnei Ma Zeh Nen V'Zeh Lo Nen. So why did one person get answered and the other one not? Zeh Yisbal Tefillah Shleima Nen, because one person davened a complete davening, meaning he had real kavana. So he was answered. V'Zeh Lo Yisbal Tefillah Shleima, the other one didn't daven a complete davening. It wasn't with total kavana, Lo Nen.
Implying that if both were Shleimas, they would have
been... Then they would have both been saved. That's what Rameyer is saying. So according to Rameyer, it comes out then so far that there doesn't seem to be a difference. We're saying that it seems, according to Rameyer, even according to Rameyer, it could be then, even if the Gzar Din, we don't know. Rameyer is not specifying whether it's before or after the Gzar Din. Was there a Gzar Din on the person in Shemayim already or not? Was it, you know, is it that the Eibishter decided, for example, that he's going to be sick or he's going to be on trial or whatever, but there wasn't actually the final Gzar Din wasn't sealed yet, he's going to die or he's going to be executed or whatever. So then you could look at it either way. If there wasn't a Gzar Din yet, then it can be saved. If not, then not.
It was.
Well, that's the thing. Rameyer is not specifying. So there are actually different Mepharshim who take what Rameyer is saying in different ways. But let's continue. Rabbi Loza, Imakan Kodim Gzardin Kalach Gzardin. Rabbi Loza says, it's not because one daven with Kavana and the other one not. It's because one is before the Gzardin and the other one afterwards. So it comes out, and with the point of Rabbi Loza, that a Yachid Gzardin can't be rescinded. Whereas one way of looking at Rabbi Meir is that maybe it can be. And then we have a third opinion in the Braisa, Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, Yachid Sa'aka La'odam Ben Kodim Gzardin Ben La'acha Gzardin. Crying out, davening, is always good for a person. It always helps, whether before Gzar Din or after Gzar Din. So therefore, so one way of looking at it is that Rabbi Yitzchak is arguing with Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar is saying after Gzar Din, that's it, you're toast. And Rabbi Yitzchak is saying not necessarily, even after Gzar Din, it can help. Other Mepharshim say that even Rabbi Yitzchak is not, that the point, the Mechalikus is indeed between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Yitzchak will be saying it's Yofa, that Sa'aka helps a little bit to mitigate things, to make that the Gzar Din won't be as harsh, but it's still going to happen. So whatever it is, you have the different opinions, and we see that there are the different possibilities of whether the Gzar Din of a Yachid can be overturned. According to Rabbi Lazar, definitely not. Different possibilities according to how we can learn what Rabbi Meir is saying and what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying. Maybe also, yes. Maybe yes. Yeah. Well, that was a tzibur. That's different. And there wasn't, yeah.
Yeah,
first of all, there was a tzibur, and second of all, there was ultimately a gzar din that they're going to get out of Mitzrayim. The question was just when. Okay, so far we seem to have established then that at least a gzar din of a tzibur definitely can be whipped up, and a gzar din of a yachid we ultimately said is machlokes. Question now is the other way around. Gzar din of a tzibur mi mitra? Can the gzar din of a tzibur be whipped up? One pasuk says, "Wash, cleanse your heart of evil." This is the Navi talking to the Jewish people collectively. But then a different pasuk also in both Pesukim and Yirmiyah says, "Ki im techabsi ban neser." Even if you cleanse yourself with neser, neser is a kind of salt. They used to use it in those days. Kind of salty earth. They used to use it in those days for cleaning. Or the tabulach bodas, and even if you make for yourself a lot of soap. Or lie, actually. Nichtam avonichfana, your avera is like a stain in front of me. Meaning, no matter how much you're trying to do tshuva, there's still like a stain there. There's still going to be an effect of it, like a stain on a beggar.
Okay,
there is that, right? But there's also, actually, the Alter Rebbe quotes also in Egeres HaTshuva, an expression from the Zohar, related to what we were talking about yesterday, Ma'abir Rishon Rishon, and related to, we learned at the end of Yoma that the Eibishter is willing to forgive an Aveira up to three times. The Alter Rebbe quotes from the Zohar that when a person does an Aveira once or twice, okay, you know, it's still forgivable. Three times already, it's like the stain has penetrated from one end, from one side of the cloth to the other already, and you need a much stronger Tshuva to accomplish anything, yeah. Even if you cleanse yourself with neser, the sabulach neser both neser and burdus are cleansing agents that they used in those days. Whatever, you know, in modern terms you might say, no matter how much soap or detergent you use, you know, there's still that stain. Which sounds like, in other words, that the gzar din is not reversible, even if they do tshuva, but it's already after the gzar din. That's it. There's already a stain there, and the stain has to be by tzibur. This is addressed to the tzibur.
But I mean, it could mean also that Gzardin Erev is reversible. There's always something that's
going
to stay.
But no, but that's the thing. If we're saying the Gzardin is reversible, means that the Ebster will rip up the Gzardin, or, you know, if it can be reinterpreted, like we said yesterday with the rain, that will be. Otherwise, it'll be completely ripped up, and that would be the equivalent of there's no stain. There's nothing left to punish for. Mashenkin, we're saying over here, there's always that nichtam avonich. There has to be the punishment. Why? If it's a tzibur, it should be, if they taka use neser and burdus, they taka do a strong tshuva, then what's the problem? My love, kan kodim gzadin, kan lach gzadin. Isn't it that the contradiction between the two psukim? One is calling on them to cleanse their hearts, and then implying that if they do, then everything will be fine, and the other one saying, no, there's still that stain. The pashtus, one is before the gzadin, one is after the gzadin. And that would mean even gzadin of a tzibur can't be ripped up. The Gemara answers, love. Idi ba'idi la'ach gzadin. No, both psukim are actually talking la'ach gzadin. But for like Kasha, kan v'gzardin sheyesh ima shvua, kan v'gzardin she'en ima shvua. It depends whether the gzardin has a shvua together with it. A shvua is a much stronger thing. It's coming now, the story with Eli, yeah. Yeah. So, when there's a shvua, then it's a much stronger thing. Then even a gzardin of a tzibur is not necessarily going to be overturned. So easily.
The whole tzibur made a
shvua? No, the Eivishter made a shvua against an entire tzibur. So then, even tshuva is not necessarily against the Jewish people, but we're going to give an example of it here against an entire family, against the family of Eli. Kedir Rav Shmuel Ba'ami. This is like what Rav Shmuel Ba'ami said. Ba'amar Rav Shmuel Ba'ami, va'amri lo amar Rav Shmuel Ba'nachmeni, amar Rav Yenison. Minayin l'gzardin sheyeshim ha'shvua she'ein nikra. How do we know that a gzardin, where the shvua along with it, is never ripped up? Shenema, the pasuk says, "V'lachen nishbaiti leveis Eli imiskaper avon beis Eli v'zevach of mincha." Therefore, I've sworn about the house of Eli that the avera of the house of Eli will never be forgiven with korbanos. And obviously, we don't mean just korbanos. It's throughout Tanakh that just korbanos by themselves don't help anyway. The point is, even with tshuva, what happened with Eli? We've talked about before. We had in particular in Shabbos, we had a whole thing about it. That the Eli's sons, Chofni and Pinchas, were doing various kinds of averus. We talked about over there, the Gemara had said they had brought an opinion there, Kolaimer, B'nei Eli, Chotu, any other Torah, that they didn't really do the. If you look at the surface of the Psukim, what you have is like this. What they did is they were Vaza the Kodshim, they used to, they would grab their pieces of the Kodshim before the Chalev, before the Emurim were even brought on the Mizbeach. And And there's also the pasuk describes over there that they would lie together with the women who came to the oil moed, to the Mishkan and Shiloh. Which is Amnath, the Gemara discusses that Tola Oim Abnei Eli Chatu Eini Alatoya, that it's not, that particular thing is not meant at face value, that what it is there were women who were bringing korbanos, they were in no hurry to bring these korbanos, so they have to make these women stay overnight in Shiloh, because you have to be there when your korban is brought, and therefore it's considered alderach, because like they interfered with these women's family life, therefore it's considered the equivalent of lying. They made these women have to lie there, and therefore it's considered like the bedakris, in other words, for great people like them. It's considered, you know, I'll tell you, for example, we had a Gemara someplace, I can't remember now where it was, that discusses we talked about it once. It's actually a Gemara in Sanhedrin, for example, that says when there's a pasuk that praises a tzaddik that he was never mezana with his friend's wife. So what? That makes you a tzaddik that you never did such a terrible avera? No, the Gemara says that shelo yored lo munuser shachavera. It really means that the deeper meaning of it is that the person didn't interfere with his chaver's livelihood. Why? Because you have there's a continuum of things over there. The worst possible way that a person can interfere with somebody else's life is to be mezana with his wife. There's a lesser thing of it and a lesser thing, and one of the lesser things, which a tzaddik is careful about, is not to interfere with his friend's parnasa. Similarly, over here, this is on a continuum of interfering with somebody else's family life is preventing the women from bringing their korbanos and being able to go back home to their husbands. That's one idea of it. There's another explanation. Some mafoshim say an idea that these women, again, they'd have to be staying overnight in Shiloh. There weren't enough hotels or whatever some of them would have to be actually sleeping outdoors. They'd have to bring along sleeping blankets or whatever and sleep outside the Beis Hamikdash. Chofni and Pinchas are also sleeping in that area. So it's also sort of asher yishkivu and etzam noshim. They're sleeping in that general area, not literally. The women couldn't. That's the thing. They lived there in Shiloh.
Yeah.
They lived there in Shiloh, so like in the Mishkan, yeah. So they were like all in the just same general area. Anyway, whatever it is, I have a discussion about the pros and cons of it. Were they chayter? Were they not? Whatever it is, it was a tremendous chilul Hashem what they were doing. And so the Eibishter, so the Pesukim describe over there. First the Eibishter sends Elkanah, a Shmuel's father, to warn them that they're doing wrong. These are the sons of Eli, who was the Kohen Gadol at the time. Not Eli himself, but he's held responsible, the Gemara says in Shabbos, because he could have stopped them from doing it, and he didn't. So that's an example of the idea that he knew about what's going on, and he didn't stop them. Actually, I mean, the Pesukim describe over there, he gives them a Musa Shemuz, but, you know, like, he could have done more than that. He could have done more than to talk to them, you know. I don't know.
He could have thrown them out of the Mishkan, or
what?
Could have thrown
them out, or whatever. Somehow he could have prevented. It's an example of if somebody is able to be mocha and not, then he's held responsible. Yes. No, people lived all over this country. Very true.
And
but these are women coming from all over when they have to.
Temporary mission.
No, there was more temporary. I mean, it lasted for 369 years.
Actually, it was never really destroyed by.
No, it was destroyed by the Plishtim.
Some of the things were still
preserved, yeah. This is during the time of the Shoftim, basically. The history of it in brief is when the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael, they set up a Mishkan in Gilgal, and it stood there for 14 years. Then they moved it to Shiloh, and it stood there for 369 years throughout all the time of the Shoftim until the end of Eli's life. Then the Plishtim invaded Eretz Yisrael, destroyed the Mishkan, captured the Aron, the whole story over there in Shmuel Beis, and Eli died from shock, finding out that his children had been killed and the Aron had been captured. Shmuel becomes the Shofet then, and then after Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, they transferred the Mishkan to Noiv, later on to Givon, after Shaul had all the Kodim of Noiv wiped out. It stood between Noiv and Givon. It stood there for 57 years, and then they built the first Beis Mikdash, and that's and then the first Beis Mikdash, second Beis Mikdash, and third Beis Mikdash. This is all during the time they were in Eretz Yisrael.
They couldn't build the Mishkan before
that. It's not that so much that they were told not to. The rule is the Beis Mikdash had to be built only when there only there's three mitzvahs that I'm right. There's three mitzvahs that the Jewish people had to do with to wipe out a Moloch, to appoint a king, to wipe out a Moloch, and to build the Beis Mikdash. During all this time, they didn't have a king yet, and they hadn't wiped out a Moloch yet. So therefore, it's not time to build the Beis Mikdash yet. And it's true. There are midrashim that say that actually the Jewish people were held responsible for the fact, in particular in David's time, that they're not eager, they're not asking, you know, let's get on with it already. Yeah, they're satisfied with the situation. Anyway. Anyway, so again, Eli's children, Hophni and Pinchas, had done these things, whatever it was exactly they did, it caused a great chilul Hashem. So afterwards Shmuel comes. This is Shmuel's very first nevuah that the Eibishter sends him to tell Eli, because of what's happening, because your sons are not listening. Therefore, that the part of his nevuah is this pasuk that I've sworn about Beis Eli that their aveda is never going to be forgiven. V'zevach u'mincha. But what does that mean? Amar Rava, v'zevach u'mincha einem eskaper, v'mincha einem eskaper. Their aveda cannot be forgiven with korbanos, with animal korbanos or with korbanos mincha. Al meskaper b'torah, but it can be forgiven through learning Torah. Abaya, zevach u'mincha einem eskaper. Abaya says all differently. It can't be forgiven with zevach u'mincha. Av meskaper b'torah with gmilas chasadim, but it can be forgiven by Torah plus gmilas chasadim. What's an example of that? Rava v'Abaya mid Beis Eli ka'asu. Rava and Abaya were both descended from Beis Eli. That's Rashi and Tosfos both discuss over here whether it's supposed to be Rava or Rava. The problem is we know from there's a number of Gemaras where we know that Rava was not a kohen. Abaya we do find was a kohen, so he can very well have been Ben Achaben from Eli. Rava was not a kohen. So Rashi brings up the possibility, okay, maybe his mother was from Eli's family.
Oh.
Right. Tosfos discusses that after all, maybe the correct gerusa should be Rabba. Anyway, so they both came from the house of Eli, and according to this, it should have come out, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, they should have died young. But Rabba da'asek v'torah chaya aboyin shnin, Rabba, who constantly learned Torah, we know the famous story where he even, you know, the Mal HaMavis couldn't even approach him because he's so busy learning Torah, so he ended up living 40 years.
They said he doesn't mean males only?
Right. But according to Rashi, it means females as well. So Rava was Oisik Patera lived 40 years. Abaya, the Oisik Patera, Gilas Chasadim, Chaya Shisin Shnin. Abaya did both Torah and Gilas Chasadim, therefore he lived 60 years.
Double.
Yeah, well, not double, but Marsha says all of them were destined to live 20 years anyway, because the Beis Din Shemayla doesn't punish a person until he's 20 years old. Well, 18 we'll say in a minute, but according to Marsha, the Beis Din Shemayla doesn't punish a person until he's 20 anyway. So they were, it's given they were going to live 20 years anyway. So Rabba in the school of the Torah got an extra 20 years. Abaya, because he had both Torah and Gemara Chasadim, got an extra 40 years. There's a lot of other interesting explanations about it. One of them being that Rabba learned Torah, which was given in 40 days, therefore he got to live 40 years. Abaya was Osik Patoto of Gemara Chasadim, so he was Soimich, he was supporting the poor people, therefore he had the school to live Samach, 60 years. The Rebbe's father has in one of his Rishimas has a discussion about that how Rabba is connected to how Rabba Rav, actually his gears he uses the gears to Rava, and he explains how Rava and Abaya represent respectively the Makif HaKorev and Makif HaRachok, the closer Makif like the ceiling and the Makif HaRachok, the further like the sky, and he brings from a Gemara and from a story in Brachas where they each identify where Hashem is, one pointed to the ceiling and the other one pointed to the sky, and therefore he associates that with this Mem and Samacha, both Makifim, they're both closed letters, but one is the Makif HaKorev and one is the Makif HaRachok, which is circular. Having said all that, though, the Zodos HaRishonim, a sefer on Jewish history, has a long discussion of it. He points out on various lines of evidence, it's impossible, he says, to say that either Rava or Rava lived only 40 years. And he brings from different places in the Gemara where it just doesn't work out with Seder Hazmanim. So he wants to learn this Gemara differently. He says that actually what the Gemara means to say is that no, there is no difference between Torah and Gemilas Chasadim. Either way, Rabba is right. Torah by itself is just as good for Beis Eli as Torah of Gemilas Chasadim. Either one will allow you to live a long life, and therefore both Rabba and Abaya, one was Osik only in Torah, the other one in Torah and Gemilas Chasadim, and yet both of them lived to the same 60 years.
How can you go and get to
Gemara
and say something?
He's saying that it should be a different Gersa. Different Gersa, yeah.
I don't know if nowadays there's anybody who can be identified.
Yeah.
Further,
so now we're going to continue. Turn it up on him. Mishpacha achas hoisib Yerushalayim, shoyu meseh meitin b'nei yud chas shana. There was a certain family in Yerushalayim where people in that family would die at age 18. They came and told Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, what can we do about it? Maybe you guys are from the family of Eli. As part of that same, actually this is from Elkanah's Nevuah, that the warning what's going to happen to the family, that all of the grown ones in your family are going to die, the Marbis, like the ones who are growing, the teenagers, are going to die, Anoshim, when they're young men. And Elkanah was Shmuel's father. He's the first. He's the first one that the Eved Shem sent to warn Eli and Chofni and Pinchas. But yeah, yeah. L'chuv iskubat Torah b'chiv. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai tells him, go involve yourselves with learning Torah and you'll live. Holchuv iskubat Torah b'chayu. Sure enough, they went and occupied themselves with Torah and they lived much longer than 18. But are you kind enough to mishmachas Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yechon and Ashmai? And they from then on they called them the family of Rabbi Yechon and after him. Maybe he told them to be involved more in Torah, I don't know.
I have heard that like our generation that is like something so much more Torah
Getting back to the Gzardin of a Tzibur. Minayin Gzardin shall Tzibur she'en a nechtam. How do we know that the Gzardin of a Tzibur is never sealed? We had the pasuk before that there was a stain of Yaveda before me. That implies that the Gzardin is already sealed. Elo afogav shenechtam nikra. How do we know that the Gzardin of a Tzibur, even if it was already sealed, can be ripped up? Which, like we said before, as long as there's no shavur with it. As the pasuk says, who is like Hashem, our God, who is close to us whenever we call out to Him. Whenever we call out, even if it's after the Gzardin, it's not too late. Why isn't there another pasuk that says seek Hashem when He is to be found, which implies Hashem is not always so close to us? There's a certain time when the Eved is to be found is available, so to speak.
What?
Yeah, those are them. The answer is Hashem b'yachid. That's talking about a yachid that he has to wait. He has Yushra Hashem b'imatzei. There's a time when the Eved is closer. You have to look for him. Hacha b'tzibur. This is talking about a tzibur. The Yochid Emas, when are we talking, when is the special time for the Yochid? The 10 days, Aseret Yemeshuvah. Two things about this in Chassidus. The Alter Rebbe explains, in the Kutta Torah, the deeper meaning of Yochid and Tzibur is, Yochid means that during the Aseret Yemeshuvah is when the Yechidah Shebenefesh it comes out, especially Yom Kippur is associated much more with the Yechidah Shebenefesh more than any other day of the year. So when the Tshuva that comes Mitzad Yechidah Shebenefesh, that's the Aseret Tshuva, is the time of year for that. The Tzibur is when the person uses the Tzibur, his Eser Koichas HaNefesh, uses all of the Koichas of his Nefesh, is the rest of the year, the Tshuva. There's also... Yeah, the Yechidah is more during Aseret Mitzvah, including Yom Kippur. So actually, that brings me to the Rebbe talks about in a number of sichas the famous question we're calling Aseret Yom Shebein Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, in the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and yet it's not 10. Between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's only 7 days. So the gist of the answer, you have to take your Gemara. It's fine, you know. Don't hate, have your shear, but you can so often.
I respect. My Talmud gives a shear. My Talmud.
Okay, no. Yeah. The gist of the answer is that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur each have their special thing. Rosh Hashanah is the idea of Tamlichuni Aleichem. Yom Kippur is the idea of Yechidah Shebenefesh, the idea of Mekoch HaTaseichem Lepnei Hashem Titaru. So on the one hand they have their special thing, and there's only a time between them. But on the other hand, they themselves are also among the Aseret Yemei. So therefore, we talk about Shabbain Rosh Hashanah, on the one hand, Bain Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim, because that's the time that's neither one or the other of those, but on the other hand, it includes Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur kind of bleed into those days as well. So you have both. Yes, that's one of the, it's Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, always includes at least one Shabbos, yeah.
That's true.
10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different kind of Teshuvah, actually. Shabbos Tshuva, there's a famous expression, Shabbos Tshuva, a Tshuva of Shabbos. That's what it means. There's a weekday Tshuva and then there's a Shabbos Tshuva, yeah. And in this connection, about the Aseret Mitzvah, the pasuk describes in Shmuel Aleph a story where David at one point is near the estates of Nabal together with his men who are wandering around with him in the desert. And Nabal is this rich but very miserly Yid who lives in this area. So David sends ten of his men to Nabal to ask him, listen, we've been helping your shepherds all summer, and it's coming Yom Tov, we have nothing. Can you give us something for Yom Tov? Yeah. And Nabal gets all angry and goes into a whole tirade. He's tough, and this guy anyway is running away from Shaul. He's not even he's a lowlife. He's a nothing. Why should I give him anything of mine? David gets very upset. Wants to judge him as a murderer. Malchus, Abigail, his wife, comes secretly and convinces David. Because he was already, so we'll learn about that in Megillah, actually, in a couple of months, Be'ez Hashem. And Abigail, Nabal's wife, comes and convinces David that don't take it out on Nabal. Anyway, she finally comes back and tells Nabal what happened, how I saved you from almost being destroyed by David. And the pasuk says when she told him that, she told him how she had saved him and how she had brought all this gift of food to David, then he had a heart attack. Either from the fright, how close he came to being killed, or a heart attack, like how you talking, all that food went to David when I didn't want to. But the pasuk says, "Vayihi paraseta sayam," it happened after 10 days. "Vayigaf Hashem es Nabal," that Hashem struck Nabal and he actually died. So he had a heart attack or whatever it was. He was lingering for 10 days and then he died. Yud yom amaya b'detayu, why after 10 days? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, can I get an etzel legimus? She nothing Nabal ba'avdi David. This is because of the 10 drinks that Nabal gave to David's servants. When David sent his 10 men to first knock on the door and ask for stuff, so at least somebody comes to your door, you give him a glass of water. So in the course of that, he got an extra 10 days.
It wasn't a meal to give.
No. Actually, that's true. Actually,
I'm asking because I heard someone. Because
right, okay.
He gave them
an actual meal? Could be. I mean, legima literally means a drink, but yeah, that's true. It says over here on the side, in the Kotei Rashi, the hechilon that he gave them to eat. Yeah, okay.
Both ways, because if there was 10 days more, but because of this, also he passed away.
Right, of course, yeah. That's a different explanation, yeah. Amr of Nachman, Amr of Abba Rabu, Eli Yud Yom Shabin Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And the other thing is, because it was the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the Eibishter was giving him one last chance. He didn't manage it, so that was the end of him.
So we learned from the first
one The Mishnah said, "V'Rosh Hashanah Kol Boi Ha'olam Over in the front of Bnei Morin." And on Rosh Hashanah, all the people in the world passed before Hashem like Bnei Morin. My Kivnei Morin, what does that mean? Hocha Targimu Kivnei Amarna. Hiu, meaning in Bavel, they type it means like sheep that are counted one by one to count for Maiser, for Maiser Behema. You have them passed through one by one. The same thing, every person passes individually in front of Hashem. Rish Lakish Amar Kamaila Space Morin. Rish Lakish says it's like the ascent when you go up the hill of Beis Morin. One explanation I saw is that Morin is Miron in Israel where Rafi is buried. Another explanation is that it's actually the Rosh has a gift to not Beit Moron, but Beit Choron, which is an area. So it's an area not far from Yerushalayim. There's a very narrow mountain pass. We have to go single file over there. So whatever it is, it's the idea. Like you have to walk up single file. Amr of Yehuda Amashmol. Another explanation: Kachayolas shall Beit David. It's like the soldiers of David's army. B'nei Morin is Meloshin Morus, like mastership. They're all soldiers under the rulership, the mastership of David, and also they're walking single file in front of the king for him to. Chayalos means like the armies, not the individual soldiers, but the armies. The army passes through single file.
Well, this says that there has to be learned people, there has to be mm-hmm. no, there has to be an army, there's mm-hmm. a special.
Yeah. Amar Rava Babachana Amar Biyachanan, B'chulim Niskar and B'skira Achaz. It's true they're all going single file in front of Hashem, but they're also all looked over with one glance. Maybe she looks at everybody collectively as well. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Achanan Nami Tanena. In fact, we see this from the words in our Mishnah. Hayotze the Pasuk, the Mishnah had quoted the Pasuk, Hayotze Yachad Libam, Hamevin Akom Aseim. The Ebishter creates all their hearts together, and he understands all their ways. Now, my comma, what does that mean? Ilay maha comma, devarnu l'kulei alma, that the Eibishter brings together all the people, umayachad libayoka adodi, and on Rosh Hashanah, he makes all their hearts united together, v'ah comes in a delav hachi. We see that on Rosh Hashanah, it's not like that. Not everybody is as one as ishkiyishach ha'belei v'achad. El, lav hachi comma, it must mean like this. Hayyotzer, the one who creates, the Eibishter, roya yachad libam, he sees all their hearts together, umayven akom aseim, and yet he understands, he looks at their deeds individually. So we see that on the one hand, Eibishter is looking collectively, and on the other hand, he's looking individually. What's the idea? So Apichsidus, there's the idea that the skid achas is the idea that the whole world is the one general machshava, the machshava akdumah da'ak, which includes everything misof ha'olam bad sofer, and then you have the individual, and you have all the individual things that everybody does.
So here
it says both the yachid and the sifra. There's also the idea that Meforshim bring. This is related to what the Rambam says that the person should always look at himself and as the world as being exactly half balanced for good and for bad. Also mitzvah achas, as the Rebbe always used to quote, you do one mitzvah, then you move the whole world and yourself to the tzad of schus. So we see from here, the Eibishter is looking at the whole world together, and also at each individual person. So one extra mitzvah can tip the scale for yourself and also for everybody.
Yeah.
That's actually a different thing that the Bali and Moses say, of course, that if a person wants to make sure they have a more favorable judgment on Rosh Hashanah, they should make sure that they're not just a yachid, they should make sure that a tzibur depends on them, basically, that there are other people who depend on them for
it's good to be a chef tzibur.
Yeah, in that sense, yeah.
It comes back to the story of Eli, that he was made responsible for the misbehavior of his son.
Well, but this is the other way around. If a person is making himself that he's responsible for others, then the Eibishter has to consider them as well when he's judging
okay.
You. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. This next Mishnah and the rest of this Perek and all of next one and the beginning of the third Perek are now going to shift focus and start talking about Kiddush HaChodesh al Pi Ariyah. Since we were talking about Rosh Hashanah has to be determined like every Rosh Chodesh by the Sanhedrin, by Edim. So now we're going to get into that. Now we're going to get into that topic. Parts of it are going to be we're going to have on Daf Chof in particular. There's going to be a very interesting Gemara that talks about some astronomical details. Mostly it's relatively straightforward.
We're going to be in space.
Starting with the Mishnah says, Al Shisha Chatan V'Tanervin. You have some Ralph at the bottom. Al Shisha Chadashim Ashluchim Yotzim. There were 6 months for which Shluchim would go out. This is after Beis Din was Mekadosh Chodesh. Then they have to inform everybody. So we'll learn in the next parak that originally they used to inform everybody by lighting torches. But eventually that stopped working because the or whatever messed things up. So from then on they had to start sending Shluchim. So just to let everybody know when Rosh Chodesh is. There's 6 months that they would go out for to inform everybody. Al Nisim. So that's when Rosh Chodesh was declared. So now they know when Yom Tov. We'll talk about actually in the Gemara. We'll get to on Chof Aleph that technically with most of the months they're actually able to leave even the evening before if they know that the Beis Din is going to declare it the next morning. So Edom saw the moon the night before, and you know they can't be Mekadosh the Chodesh at night, only the next day. So the Shluchim can already leave the night before, except for Nissan and Tishrei. They actually have to wait till Beis Din says the word Mekodesh. Basically, from now for approximately the next week, and a little bit, we're going to be dealing with all the different angles on Kiddush HaChodesh, how the whole process, how they called in the Edim, how they interrogated them, etc. Yeah. So, Shisha Chadashim HaShluchim Yotzim, so there's 6 months for which the Shluchim would go out to inform everybody. Al Nissen Mipnei HaPesach, they would go out on Nissan to inform everybody when Pesach is. So like this, you know when Rosh Chodesh Nissan is, so now you'll know when Pesach is, otherwise you're going to have to keep 2 days. Al Av Mipnei HaTainis, they would go out for Av because of Tisha B'Av. Al Elul Mipnei Rosh Hashanah, they'd go out on Elul so that people know what's going to be with Rosh Hashanah, which this, there's two different explanations. Rashi says it means like this. Once you know when Elul began, most years Elul is 29 days. We'll talk about that in the Gemara. So once you know when Elul began, then automatically you know what day Rosh Hashanah is, and you'll be able to keep only 1 day Rosh Hashanah. If you don't know when Elul began, you might have to keep 2 days. Tosfos says not. Tosfos says we find in many places that actually they made 2 days of Rosh Hashanah everywhere in Chutz La'aretz. No, rather the reason why you need to inform everybody when Elul began is because otherwise you're going to have 3 days of Suffolk, because otherwise you don't know whether Av was 29 days or 30. You also don't know whether Elul was 29 days or 30, so now you have 3 possibilities of the day of Rosh Hashanah. So in order to narrow that down, they would send out Shluchim to tell everybody when Elul began. The Shluchim would go as far as they could, yeah.
You cannot have 4?
No. Eventually, there's a certain amount, first of all, they went out for Av to tell everybody when Tisha B'Av is, but besides that also, eventually, you're usually not going to have that many 29 day months in a row or that many 30 day months in a row. Wherever the Beis Din was stationed at the time, yeah.
So you had to have most of the time 29 and 30, or 30 and 29.
Yeah. Next, al tishrei mivkei takanas amoedis. They would go out tishrei time to tell everybody when the various other yom tovim are. Because yes, let's go with Rashi. Of course, you already knew when Rosh Hashanah was because you knew when Rosh Chodesh El was, and therefore automatically you know El was 29 days. But still, you want to know. You know, you don't want to be nervous about maybe we're celebrating Yom Kippur and Sukkot on the wrong days. So therefore, they'd send out shluchim as well for tishrei to inform them that after all, you were right. Again, according to Tosfos, the reason would be you had to send out for Elul so that people don't have 3 days worry about when Rosh Hashanah is, but still, you still have to narrow down. Now you have 2 days, Rosh Hashanah, you still have to narrow down which one is the real first day of Tishrei to count for Yom Kippur and for the rest of it. No, they couldn't travel on Yom Tov or on Shabbos itself. We'll learn about that on Daf Chaf Aleph. Al Kislev Mepnei Chanukah, they would go out Kislev to tell everybody when Chanukah is. Val Adar Mepnei Purim, that's the 6 months. Ochshol Yabeis Mikdash Kayim, when the Beis Mikdash was standing, Yotzen Afal Iyar Mepnei Pesach Katan. They would also go out for Iyar because of Pesach Katan, because of Pesach Sheni.
This wouldn't have been a Mishnah in the first
Pesach
Sheni.
Wow.
No, we're talking in the second Beis Mikdash. But actually, some of Forshim say that actually you still have 6 no matter what. Because in the time of the Beis Mikdash, they wouldn't have been going out for Av, because you weren't fasting Tisha B'Av. We're going to talk about that in the Gemara. Conversely, though, they were going out for Pesach Katan. They were going out for Pesach Sheni. After the Churban, they're not going out for Pesach Sheni anymore, but instead they're going out for Av. According to the Rambam, not though, because according to the Rambam, we're going to talk about in the Gemara when you do and don't fast the Dalet Tzomis, but according to the Rambam, during the time of the second Beis Mikdash, they always fasted Tisha B'Av. The other fast, not. We're going to talk about the Gemara that will assault and all Simcha, but the Rambam holds Tisha B'Av was an exception. So according to the Rambam, it would mean that in the time of the Beis Mikdash, they went out for 7 months rather than 6.
In
the time of the second Beis
Mikdash.
Still Tisha B'Av.
First one is true.
Yeah. The Gemara asks, V'lifku nami atamuz v'tevis. Why don't the Shluchim also go out to inform everybody about Rosh Chodesh Tammuz and Rosh Chodesh Tevis, to tell them when Shivat v'Tammuz and when Asar v'Tevis is? The Amar of... Still, the Amar of Chana... But that's the question. They're not full fast days, but they are fast days. So wait. The Amr of Chon Babizna, Amr of Shimon Chasida, my dichtiv, what does it mean when it says in the passage, Koyama Hashem Tzvakas, Tzoma Ravi, Vitzoma Hamishi, Vitzoma Shvi, Vitzoma Hasiri, the fast of the fourth month, which we're going to talk about, we're going to identify soon what all these fasts are, but the fast of the fourth month, which is Tammuz, the fast of the fifth month, which is Av, Tzoma Shvi, the fast of the seventh month, which is Tishrei, Vitzoma Hasiri, and the fast of the tenth month, which is Tevis, all these fasts, they'll all be, for the Jewish people, they'll all be joy and happiness. Right? That's the question. The pasuk is calling them a tzayim, a fast, and it's calling them a sasim, a simcha. The context is the people are coming to Zechariah after the second Beis Mikdash is built, and they're saying throughout Golas Bavel we've been fasting these 4 fasts. Now the Beis Mikdash is built. Do we continue fasting them? And he tells them that no, that they're going to be the sasim or simcha. So but what is it? Are they fast or are they sasim or simcha? The answer is, when there is peace, then they will be l'sasen l'simcha. Then those days are days of celebration. Ein shalom tzoyim. When there's no shalom, then they're going to be fasting. So what does it mean shalom? So Rashi says it means she'ein yada obdik achavim takif al Yisrael. That the goyim are not subjugating the Jewish people. When they are, that's considered not shalom. Which would mean, according to Rashi, that even, for example, during much of the time of the second Beis Mikdash, the Goyim were still ruling over the Jewish people during Golus Yavan, for example. So according to Rashi, it would come out they were still fasting these fasts during that period also. According to other Rishonim, though, Shalom and not Shalom means whether there's a Beis Mikdash or not. So then, the point is that you have to fast during Tammuz and during Tevis as well. So why aren't Shluchim going out to tell everybody when Rosh Chodesh Tammuz and when Rosh Chodesh Tevis is? Amar Papa Hachi Kamar. No, because what it means is like this. Bizman Shiyash Shalom Yulasatan L'Simcha. When was Shalom, again according to Rashi, that the Goyim are not subjugating us, and according to everybody else, that there's a Beis Mikdash, then there's Satan L'Simcha. Yes, Gzeres HaMalchus Tzayim. Conversely, if at the time when there's Gzeres HaMalchus, when the Goyim are actually making Gzeres against the Jewish people like the Romans did, then they become a fast day, definitely. Ein Gzeres HaMalchus Ve'en Sholem, but in normal times, there's no Gzeres HaMalchus, but there's also no Sholem. Rotsu Mis'anin, Rotsu Ein Mis'anin. If they want, they can fast. If they don't want, they don't have to fast. So it's a Rishus, in other words. So if it's a Rishus, then we don't bother sending out Shluchim for those months, because it's not an obligation to fast on those fasts. The question is, Yachi Tisha B'Av Nami, well, the same thing about Tisha B'Av. Why are we sending out Shluchim for Tisha B'Av? Or, according to the Rambam, why do they fast Tisha B'Av even during the time of the second Beis Mikdash? Amar Rav Papa, Shiny Tes B'Av, Ha'uva Huchpul Obeit Tzores. Tisha B'Av is different because there were so many Tzores that were doubled on that day. Da'amamah, because we learn in a Mishnah at the end of Tainus, but Tesba of Chorav Abayis, but Hashonu of Hashniya, Tisha B'Av, the first and second Beis HaMikdash were both destroyed. Vinokad of Beitar was captured by the Romans, which is a city that had hundreds of thousands of Jews in it.
Why was it?
Tisha B'Av. And the city of Yerushalayim was plowed up by the Romans. So we see so many tzaras happened on it, so therefore that's something special. Which Tosfos points out, I mean, Shavuot of the time was also, there were five tragedies that happened, the Mishnah mentions in Tainus. The difference is that each one of those was a different thing. With Tisha B'Av, you have this Beis HaMikdash was destroyed twice. That the one tzara was repeated twice, that makes Tisha B'Av more of a serious thing.
Yeah, twice well was also.
Yeah. Well, what do we mean? We just said Rotsu Misanin, Rotsu and Misanin. So what does that mean? Nowadays you have a choice whether you want to fast Shavuot of the time or not. So actually, no. In Shulchan Aruch it's brought, all Jewish people nowadays have accepted these fasts as a chayv on themselves, and therefore it becomes a chayv. There's no ratzu or not ratzu. It's a given now. However, because we're saying that there is this difference, that the other ones, other than Tisha B'Av, is ratzu or not ratzu, that is one reason why we have this difference between Tisha B'Av and all the other ones, where the other ones only start by Eloz HaShachar, and you're technically allowed to bathe and wear shoes and so forth. Having said that, by the way, Bach does say that, properly speaking, if you can help it, you shouldn't bathe and so forth. Wearing shoes is fine, it's different. There's a matter of people making fun of you or whatever, but you shouldn't, if possible, bathe and anoint yourself and whatever. The other inuyim of Tisha B'Av, you should preferably not do on the other fasts also.
Even though,
because that's what I'm saying, it's not Ratzu anymore, now it's accepted by everybody, but nevertheless, that because of this Ratzu versus not Ratzu thing, that's why we have it, they only begin in the morning as opposed to Tisha B'Av, which begins the night before, and when you're definitely, you're for sure not allowed to do these things. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Amar Rav Shimon, speaking of these four fasts, there were four things that Rav Akiva, who was Rav Shimon's Rebbe, used to darshan in a certain way, but I don't darshan like him. I learn each of these psukim differently. Rav Shimon is saying this. Which, Mepharshim on Shulchan Aruch point out that usually a person is not allowed to contradict his Rebbe, but in Divrei Agadta you're allowed to. These four drashas are all Divrei Agadta, so therefore there's less of an issue. Maybe. It doesn't say one way or the other. He says, Hoyer Rabbi Akiva Dorosh, so maybe. Whatever it is, to be Rashi quotes what all the four psukim are, but for our purposes, what's important is one which talks about these four fasts. The pasuk had listed, Tzoma Raviv, Tzoma Chamishi, Tzoma Shviv, Tzoma Hasiri. What is each of these fasts? Tzoma Raviv is a test of Tammuz. Tzoma Raviv means the ninth of Tammuz. Shabbai Hufka'ir, that's the day when the city was when the city was breached, when they broke into the city of Yerushalayim, the besiegers. Shenema Baravi Batisha Lachodesh, in the fourth month, on the ninth day, Vayachakarav Ba'ir, the famine was very strong in the city, Vilahoya Lacham La'amaret, and the people of the land had no bread, Vatibaka'ir, and the city was breached. Bamai Korale Ravi, why is the fast called Soma Ravi? Because Ravi Lachadashim, it's the fourth of the month. Tammuz is the fourth month counting from Nisan. Which, by the way, what do you mean, test ninth of Tammuz? We don't fast the ninth of Tammuz, we fast Shavuot of Tammuz. So Tosfos points out two possibilities. One is that it's true, the first Beis HaMikdash, the walls of Yerushalayim were breached on the ninth of Tammuz, but the second Beis HaMikdash, they were breached on the 17th of Tammuz, 3 weeks before the Korban. And the second Korban is more important to us, because that's the one, we're still in Golos because of that, so therefore that's the one we fast on. The Chum didn't want to make that we should have to fast two fasts a week apart in the same month for the same kind of thing, and therefore they just made it the 17th. Then Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that actually, no, what actually, it really was the 17th of Tammuz, but people got mixed up on the date. There was such confusion and such a hunger and everything, there was thought, that people thought it was the 9th of the month, even though it was really the 17th. So the Eidusha told the Navi to write according to the date that people thought it was. Actually, though, the Yerushalmi brings another interesting possibility. It really was the 9th of Tammuz, but the Yerushalmi says, either way, everybody agrees it was 3 weeks from when the walls were breached until the Churban. So the Yerushalmi says, according to the opinion that it really was the 9th of Tammuz, there was no mix-up, it really was the 9th of the month, it means the Churban was not on Tisha B'Av, the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash was on the first of Av, on Rosh Chodesh. And the Yerushalmi quotes a pasuk from Yechezkel that seems to support that. So if the breaching of the wall was on Test Tammuz, then the Churban was on Aleph Av. If the breaching was on Shavuot of Tammuz and just they got mixed up on the date, then the Churban was on Tisha B'Av. Either way, it's 3 weeks.
That contradicts what we were before, that it would be fast Tisha B'Av, because it happened twice. It happened.
So the Yerushalmi, I guess, would answer that it happened in the same month. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, Same Chamishi.
For sure, there were 3 weeks.
Yeah. For sure, there were 3 weeks. That's what the Yerushalmi is saying. Yeah. According to the Babli, though, not necessarily. The Babli is not saying anything about Tilkul Cheshbonos or about different opinions or anything like that. According to the Babli, it may well be that the first Beis HaMikdash there was a month in between, and by the second Beis HaMikdash there was 3 weeks. Tzaima Chamishi is the Tisha B'Av. Tzaima Chamishi is the ninth B'Av. Shabbat Nisra face of the Kenu when the house of Hashem was burnt. Why is it called Chamishi? Because Chamishi L'Chadashim is the fifth of the month. Next, Tzaima Shvi is a Gimel B'Tishrei. Shabbat Ner Gdali Ben Achikam. Tzaima Shvi means the third of Tishrei, which is the day that Gdali Ben Achikam was killed. Umi Horgei Yishmael Ben Nathanya Horgei. Who killed him is Yishmael Ben Nathanya. Which, why does the Gemara have to point that out? A couple of different Mephoshevites, the Pasuk actually points it out. The Pasuk tells the whole story, how Gedaliah was assassinated. There's different explanations. One of them is that the Gemara wants to point out what a tragedy it was that another Yid killed him. That's Yishmael Ben Nathanya, another Yid, a fellow Yid. Also, that during Aseret Mitzvah, you would think Yishmael Ben Nathanya was Gimel Tishrei, two days after Rosh Hashanah. Well, it's a whole long story in the Sukkim over there. Basically, Shmuel ben Nathanya was jealous of Gedaliah's position, and he was a secret agent working on behalf of the king of Ammon, who didn't like the fact that there were still Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. He wanted that they were all going to have to be forced out, etc. Yeah, it's a whole long sad story. Gedaliah was a tzaddik. Shmuel was a Russia. Yeah, but actually, not in the Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash was very charov.
He was hired under Romans.
He was not the Romans. He was hired by the Ammonim. Gedaliah was appointed. Gedaliah was appointed by Nebuchadnezzar to be the governor of the Jews who were left in Eretz Yisrael. Right. What ended up happening after Gedaliah was assassinated, all the rest of the Jews were scared and they all ran away to Mitzrayim, even though Yirmiyahu told them not to. And that was the end of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael for the next 52 years. So that the Rambam says that's the focus. Is it's not so much Gedaliah. I mean, there's the fact Gedaliah was killed, and as the Gemara is going to say over here, that the fact that a tzaddik was killed is a terrible thing. But the Rambam says it's not just that; it's because of the aftermath of it. So the fact that there was the gachelis yisrael on sheres is the Rambam expression, like the last ember, the last burning coal of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael was extinguished. Lalamdacha, this teaches you, Shashkulam, Yisafan, Shal Tzadikim, Kastrefas, Beis HaVakeinu, the death of Tzadikim is as serious as the burning of the Beis HaMikdash. So we see that they put the Tzum Gedaliah on the same level as the other facts that have to do with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash.
Shkula, not
me. Shkula. It's weighed to the same extent. Ba'amai Korali Shvi, why is it called seventh? Because Shvi L'Chadashim, because it's the seventh month. Tzom HaAsiri, Rabbi Akiva says, Zasar B'Tevis. The Tzom HaAsiri is the tenth of Tevis. Shabbat Samach Melech Bavel Al Yerushalayim. On that day, Melech Bavel. No, we were going to be. There's a minion at 9:40, and we usually join that one. Yeah, if it's possible to do it out there, that would be better, because we're still learning. But whatever. Shabbat Samach Melech Bavel Al Yerushalayim. On that day, the king of Bavel besieged Yerushalayim. The Rebbe, by the way, quote in a couple of later years, in Sichas of Asar B'Tevis, the Rebbe pointed out why the expression Samach, there's like a positive sense of it. It should have been a time when everybody is now Samach on each other, when all Jewish people are now Ba'achdus and they're all leaning and then depending on each other. Unfortunately, they didn't live up to it, so therefore there was instead the Samach Melech Bavel Al Yerushalayim. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayid Var Hashem Eila Vashon Atchis, Bachodesh Asiri, Ba'also Lachodesh Lamer, Yechezkel says, the Evish spoke to me, I'm in the ninth year since Golot Yechonia, in the tenth month, which is Tevis, on the tenth of the month, Lamer, he says to me, Ben Adam, K'sav Lacha Shem Hayoyim, Es Etzem Hayoyim Azeh, write down the name of this day, the essence of this day, on this very day, Samach Melech Bavala El Yerushalayim, the king of Bavala has besieged Yerushalayim. So he besieged on the Asar of Tevis. Ba'amai Kor Le'asiri, Asur Lachodoshim. Why is it called Tzom HaAsiri? Because Tevis is the tenth month, counted from Nisan. Now, Rabbi Akiva asks, this one should have been first. In the order of events, the first thing that happened was the siege, then the breaching of the wall, then the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and then the killing of Gedaliah ben Achikam. So why is this one listed last? Just to put the months in the proper order. Tevis is the last of the month, Tevis is the tenth month, counting from Nisan. They were going in the order of the months. Fourth, fifth, seventh, and then tenth. That's Rabbi Akiva.
Fourth,
fifth, seventh, and tenth. Then it started with Hasar B'Tevis, but we're putting it last because it happens to be last in the year, basically, Rabbi Akiva is saying. Now, Rabbi Shimon says, V'ani eni oimakein. I don't say like that. Ela, Tzom HaAsiri is a chamish of B'Tevis. Rather, the Tzom HaAsiri is the fifth of Tevis. That's when the news reached the Goyla, reached Bavel, that the city had been destroyed. The city was destroyed. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Tisha B'Av, but the news didn't reach Babel until 5 months later, until early Tevis, till Hay Tevis. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Vayhi b'shtei esreshana." It happened in the 12th year, ba'asudi, in the 10th month, ba'chamisha l'chodesh l'golosenu, in the 5th month, counting from our golos, which is golos Yechonia. Ba'elai apolit mirshlayim, a refugee from Yerushalayim came to me, Lamer, and said, "Huksa'ir," the city was destroyed. Also, Yom Shmur Yom Srefer. So Rabbi Shimon says they didn't make the fast for the 10th of Tevis. They made the fast for the 5th of Tevis because they made the day when the news was brought as bad as the day when it actually happened. Now that's like with Avelos. If a person's parent, Rachman Olfan, dies and they only hear the news sometime later, they sit Shiva at that point for a day. And Rabbi Shimon says, "But Nidin Dvorai Midvorav." What I'm saying seems more logical than how Rabbi Akiva said it. Shani Omer Arushin Rishon Malach Nachan. Because according to me, it comes out the Tanaisim are actually listed in the order in which they happen. First is the breaching of the wall, then is the Churban, then is the killing of Gedaliah, and then 3 months later, the news arrives in Babel. So therefore, it's not only in the order of the months, but it's actually in the order of the events happen. Where's Rabbi Akiva? He's putting the last first and the first last. He's putting Asar Batavis last, even though it happened first. And the difference is just that Rabbi Akiva is going according to the Seder of the month, whereas I'm going according to the order of the actual disasters, of the actual punishment. There is an interesting thing. The Minchas Chinuch says, how could there be such a machlokes? I mean, what did people do every year at Tevis? Did they fast on the 5th of Tevis or on a Asar of Tevis? The Minchas Chinuch says a very interesting idea. If you look in the Pasuk over here that Zechariah is saying, he doesn't identify any of these fasts by date. He only identifies them by month. Tzayim HaRavid, Tzayim HaChamishi. So he says the original Takana was, you have to fast one day during each of these months to remember the tzaras that happened in that month. But it doesn't have to be any specific day. So different places have different minhagim. In where Rabbi Akiva lived, the minhag was Asar HaTevis. Where Rabbi Shimon lived, the minhag was Hay Tevis. Eventually, they established that there's a certain day. There's Shavuos for Tammuz and only that. In Tammuz, Tisha B'Av and only that, and Av, and so forth. No, not that this is after that, because Ashkenazi did all hundreds of years before Rabbi Shimon. At some point, maybe the later Tanoim, maybe the Amoraim, whatever, determined that it has to be a certain date in each month, and it became that. Having said that, by the way, in the Slichus of Asar B'Tevis, we do mention this as well. We only fast Asar B'Tevis, but we actually, in the Slichus of Asar B'Tevis, we mention four things that happened in Tevis. One is that the Torah was translated to Greek on Ches Tevis, that Ezra Sozo died on Ches Tevis, the siege of Yerushalayim on Asar B'Tevis, and the news that reached Bevoyela Apollet Lemur Hukzair on the 5th of Tevis.
Apollet
means dying? Apollet means the refugee, somebody who escaped from the war. That was Oig Malach HaBashan, yeah.
Yeah,
the same word, I call it, yeah. So the simple meaning is a refugee, yeah. Itmar, the Gemara says, starts a discussion, Rav and Rav Chanina Amri bottle Megillus Tainis. Rav and Rav Chanina both say that Megillus Tainis is bottle. Megillus Tainis is a sefer, it was written towards the end of the second Beis Hamikdash, which lists a number of days when nisim, or important things, happened to the Jewish people, which therefore the chachamim of those times declared that either it's important enough that you shouldn't fast on them and you shouldn't do espedim, or some of them just that you shouldn't fast, you're allowed to do espedim. It's called Megillus Tainis because the days loyli sanabah, and you're not allowed to fast on them. Now, all those days, the question is, are those still in effect? Are you not allowed to be kaveh, a tainis, or to give a hesped on one of those days? Or not? So Rav and Chanina say, no, after the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, Megillus Tainis is bottled. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amid loy batal Megillus Tainis. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say that it's not batal. Rav Chanina, Amid batal Megillus Tainis, because they say like this. Hachakama. We said before about the Balad Tzomus. We said Bizman Shiyah Shalom Yiyu L'Sosim L'Simcha Ein Shalom Tzomus. We said before that when there's a Beis Hamikdash or when there's Shalom, whatever the definition of Shalom is, then the days are Sosim and Simcha, Shavuos V'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, the rest of them. When there's no Shalom, then they're fast days. V'hanach, Nami, Kihani. And so the days that are listed in Megillus Tainis is the same kind of thing. When are they the Sosin or Simcha? When there's a Beis Hamikdash? When there's Shalom? No Shalom, then no days in Megillus Tainis either. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Levi, Amri loy batal Megillus Tainis, where Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Levi say that Megillus Tainis is not batal. Why? Hani hu talinu rachmanu v'vinin Beis Hamikdash. These ones, the Tainis of Tammuz, of etc., the Toto, the Pasuk, is toilet them on the Beis Hamikdash. When there's Shalom, when there's not Shalom. Aval hanach k'dekaimi kaimi, but the other ones from Megillus Tainis, whatever they were, they stay. A nest happened on that day, so it stays, even after Beis Hamikdash is charib. Unless it's Masiv Rav Kahana, Maisa v'gozru tainis b'chanaka b'lud. It happened once that they declared a tainis on Chanukah in the city of Lud, a tainis for rain or whatever it was. Rabbi Lozer went and bathed, even though you don't usually bathe on a tiny sibur, and Rabbi Shua went and got a haircut. But Omr Lahem, and they told the people, go fast for the fact that you fasted. In other words, you have to fast as Truva for the fact that you fasted on Chanukah. Now Chanukah is one of the days that's listed in Megillah Tainis. Chanukah is not in Tanakh, because it happened 200 years after Tanakh was finished. So it's only in Megillah, it's only listed in Megillah Tainis. If we're saying that now Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Shua lived after the Churban. If they're telling the people you were wrong for fasting on Hanukkah, that means that the Megillah Tainis still exists even after the Beit Mikdash is Charev. Rabbi Yosef, Shiny Hanukkah, Deis Mitzvah. Rabbi Yosef says Hanukkah is different because of the Mitzvah involved with it, the Mitzvah of lighting the menorah. Amr Abaya, so what? V'tivotali, v'tivotam mitzvasa. So what? So after the Churban, the Yom Tov of Hanukkah should be bottled just like the rest of Megillah Tainis, and the Mitzvah of it should be bottled. Why is it any more special? Elom, Rabbi Yosef, Shiny Chanukah, Demafarsim Nisa. Rabbi Yosef says, no, Chanukah is different, not just because it has a mitzvah, because the ness of it is so famous. The other things in Megillah Tainis, the average person doesn't know. The ness of Chanukah is so famous. Everybody knows about it. Such person of Nisa. So therefore, we don't want to be Mavapalit. But the rest of the things in Megillah Tainis, according to Rav and Rav Chanina, we are Mavapalit after the Churban Beis Mikdash. Well, the Gemara will continue the discussion, but we'll leave that for tomorrow.